Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, we're continuing our segment here on a topic that I launched in the very first weekend in June. The first part, we talked about the great talent war, how demographic shifts are in motion, and what leaders must do to prepare in advance and not succumb to what might be already catching you off guard if you haven't been the wise to it. And let me explain a little bit, just to recap, that there's actually a lot of striking information now that's surfacing, more than it has in the past, about the sea change of the numbers of talent across generations and experience sets, and particularly those that might be ready to step onto leadership roles, and what the ramifications then should be on your ability as a leader to develop talent, train, recruit, and most importantly, retain that talent. Quite often here on the show, we make references to how we've got four generations of individuals in our organization, everything from traditionalists all the way down to millennials, and how there's behavior differences in how people would interact, let alone, of course, we know there's a clear distinction between the digital immigrants versus the digital natives and their use of technology. But the one thing that often is not raised at the same time when we talk about the behaviors and so on is the sheer numbers of people that are in each of those categories and how it's affecting how we manage today and lead our organizations and the other changes it's driving, everything from higher education, universities, training programs up into both profit and non-for-profit, military, public service related talent. And where I go from that is if we thought that the baby boom generation, which is, by the way, retiring 10,000 people a day, truly retiring, people stepping out of the workforce and not even working part-time, 78 million people. And back probably in the 70s, when some of the popular books like Megatrends or the New Rules, Searching Fulfillment in a World Turned Upside Down, those books that were referenced back then, talked about the pig and the python, meaning the advancement of the age group called the baby boomers, 78 million, if you think that had impact on the market and how we evaluate and position social values and the like, it's nothing compared to what's going to happen when the millennial generation comes through this process. In fact, in motion right now, that's 101 million here in the United States. The other point to recognize is that the generation called Gen X, after us baby boomers, is significantly smaller, to the tune of 10%. I bring this to your attention, and I mentioned in one of the prior segments that, for example, a lot of conversations around retailers having trouble saying, where did all the teenagers go? And one particularly was a story back in January about Abercrombie and Fitch, which typically catered to teens, that their sales have precipitously dropped off. One of the reasons people were citing, of course, is that teens now want to spend more money on their handheld device than necessarily a new pair of blue jeans, number one. Number two, they might not have this disposable income like teens did in the past, just because the economy hasn't provided the opportunity for part-time jobs, as at least my generation enjoyed or had to get to anyways. But the one thing that these articles constantly miss is there's just surely a much smaller number of teens based on where the demographics have played out. I also referenced in another part of our segment, our second solo related to this topic, about how that apprenticeships have really not been so thoroughly exercised to close the skills gaps that within organizations. I mean, classically, we just mentioned in the segment before that companies that are manufacturing based, to have that core group of individuals that span a variety of age groups that are really trained in skilled machining, specificity of electrical, electronic, and so on, those individuals in numbers have dropped precipitously. And thus, the programs that supported training them are just now realizing organizations they need to bring them back into full force. But one of the reasons they've been in decline is because there's been fewer numbers to join them. Not necessarily lack of desire, but purely the demographic shifts. So when I moved to the second part of our solo last week to talk about well, what can we do then from an organizational standpoint is to really take a good hard look at the numbers of people we have in different skill sets and disciplines, and then know that, of course, you're going to have natural attrition with people choosing to retire or need to relocate or opt out to go take another different career route. So how do we go and attract then the right kind of people? In other words, the word is, how do I, though, change the view of what the pipeline would be? Because I tell you, thinking you're going to recruit and retain talent from just the traditional segments you did in the past most likely is not going to keep you there with regard to the shifts we're seeing now in this greater field of talent. We talked about how do you elongate your pipeline, meaning how might you encourage your current employees to stay longer, particularly those who are of more senior status that have the institutional wisdom and knowledge anyway. You really don't want to lose them, although perhaps they don't have the capacity to work the intense 50 to 60 hour work weeks that you might have. But couldn't you look at how you could bring people in to part-time or job share to make that happen? So that was one example. We also talked about how you just clearly can expand the pipeline, and how do you get the numbers to increase of certain talented skill sets that you need. We talked about cross-training and how we can have job shadowing so that people can do peer-to-peer coaching or mentor-to-protege, or actually the flip of that, protege-to-mentor. Job sharing to stem full retirements, as I mentioned. Also looking at maybe sabbaticals from work for a period of time so you have a retention hook so someone can come back into a role with another fresh perspective. Again, how we can attract and retain people. And then that also, that plus elongating the pipeline, expanding it, and then increasing the velocity through which people can pass through it to get ready for those next big roles. If there's ever an area that a lot of companies are feeling the pinch on, is that for those of us that baby boomers that had the opportunity to lead such phenomenally large organizations or complex organizations, oftentimes, though, what happened is we stopped potentially the opportunity for others more junior to step into those positions. So the smart leaders right now are taking a good hard look at their more senior experience and statesmen, I'll call it, those of you there that really have the wisdom, not just the gray hair, but the wisdom and the bumps and bruises from having learned the hard lessons of leading the organization in different ways, is how you could be repositioned as a subject matter expert now with those more junior around you that you could train and mentor real time while they're doing the work. Not in the classroom setting necessarily, but real time. So the idea of how we can offer the opportunity for partnering so that then those more junior, and I don't mean necessarily just by age, but years of experience, could come through that process a lot faster and be ready to step in. In my last company, one thing I did when I stepped in, I took a good hard look at the nature of the work that people were engaged in. And I happened to ask the question of, you know, particularly those employees in their 20s and 30s, the extent to which we were really stretching them and also allowing a certain tolerance for mistakes and for failure, which really translates into tremendous learning. And what I saw in this organization I was part of is that we were so risk adverse that we really didn't allow, quote, the kids to get a few skin, knees, and bumps and bruises so that when mom and dad, quote, the older, more experienced people weren't there, they'd really be able to stand on their own. For those of you that are parents that are listening in, is this not the same familiar conversation we have in our society today of having helicoptered our children too much, that they don't know the life skills, perhaps because we've stepped in to do it for them, not wanting them to perhaps have some of the harder, tougher roles? But then we wonder why perhaps some of our youth in their 20s can't stand on their own or are wandering. Folks, the same thing is happening with inside organizations. For those who are leaders, to watch how your managers, are they really enabling and allowing the next up-and-coming ranks to go through the tough lessons of learning it on their own? But there's more to that picture than meets the eye, though, of course. And really, that is, how do we get out of our way so that the new thoughts and experiences, innovation, and the skill sets can really flourish and enable change? We talked earlier on the show today about process improvement, for example. And there's no finer place to have your younger talent or those younger in service years at your firm into a mix and for them to sit there and say, now, why is it we do it that way? And don't you realize we could skip these four steps or reconfigure it this way or that way? So some of your most innovative ideas comes right from your people who are new. That's provided, by the way, they don't get inculcated too quickly on, well, you need to understand, Charlie, that's the way we've always done it before. So I'm watching for that opportunity. the idea of also changing your view of the pipeline for your talent is that how can we create some rotations across your business units or your major departments? Even interesting thought of your supply base. Many of you out there who lead organizations, you know you're highly dependent upon, and justifiably so, with partnering with your suppliers. What would it look like if you flipped some of your employees into the supply base and the vice versa to open up the possibility of stronger learning and then bring back cross ideas that work for both organizations? Another is for business or non-for-profits for whom an employee can learn or do faster by really contributing outside the norm. Classic example is a number of universities are looking to loan their professors out full-time into industry so that then when they come back into the classroom, think how much more relevant their examples are that they use with their students. And the vice versa, to bring the teachers out into industry that they can do that. And then the industry participants who go out and work part-time or teach a nighttime class, so you can anticipate what the learning needs are going to be and look like for the new employees that you bring in. Of course, Pima Community College, other community colleges across the country, that's one of their strongest mechanisms for their faculty, called adjunct faculty, is to have full-time practitioners teaching the courses on accounting or teaching what it's looked like to be an aviation technology specialist because the person has first-hand work experience. That type of rotating you can do regardless of what the size of your business is to look for cross references because it also brings in great ideas. Keep in mind though, when you do that, you really want to look hard at the sponsorship and the mentorship of people because you have to look at kind of the outgoing and the incoming to allow that to happen. There's also though, in keeping in mind as you want to change that view of your pipeline of your talent, is to make sure there aren't any organizational, I call them disincentives, that choke off the ability. For example, some organizations really are poised to headcount tracking to determine where they are in managing their total workforce, and thus a part-time person could be counted as a full-time head, and therein lies that people will not then step off and consider a talented person to keep them on in a part-time capacity. And then also how we then assign overhead and cost burdening to that, that can get kind of mixed up in stepping back and keeping the bigger perspective that really to get the best products and services, it takes the best people, whatever that combination might be. I'd mentioned earlier in the conversation here about the power of apprenticeship programs, co-op intern programs, summer jobs. And these aren't to put our summer interns in the position of just being gap fillers for those who go on vacation. But aren't we all surprised at how much a talented young individual can bring to the party if you just give them the reins to do it? I know I felt that when I was a summer intern, that I was first off the bat, was wisely counseled by a mentor who said, don't ever introduce yourself as the summer intern. To me, you're a full-fledged engineer. You're fully empowered. Albeit, do come and ask me questions if you feel like you're over your head, and how much greater my ability was to contribute with that kind of mindset, and also how people responded to you. We have, of course, a wonderful high school here in town, San Miguel High School, that places high school level students in internships, so they get life business skills at the same time, and how many companies that sponsor these young people recognize the power that they have to contribute. When it comes to elongating that pipeline, expanding it, increasing the throughput, of course, you always have to be on the lookout for new pipelines to attract new and different talent to your organization. The days of walking into one specific college university and thinking you're automatically going to patriate their top students from one program straight into yours, folks, the competition is fierce. And some of that competition might be that younger professionals now are not looking for the type of traditional, quote, careers that perhaps their predecessor were. In fact, I would tell you, speaking with millennials, that that word career has some negative stigma to it, that it maybe connotes being restricted or wedded to just one organization, and they know how much the industry and world has changed, that there's no guarantees in life any longer to the extent that it was maybe 20 or 30 years ago, or certainly when I was growing up in the larger organizations. Another thought about new pipelines would be to think in terms of people who formerly worked in your organization, and might they like to come back? And by the way, they're coming back, particularly given if they've worked in maybe one of your competitors or a tangential industry or maybe something totally different, that really they're coming back with whole different new headsets, mindsets, and access to information and ideas that you didn't have before. The other thing, of course, likewise, is for any of your employees that graduated and now you're alumni, provided they had a pleasant and a great experience that kicked their career in whichever direction it was headed at that time, they can be some of your greatest referral networks. And I think that many leaders, we have to get over the ego-related thing, and I'll say this organizational ego, that when someone chooses to leave our starship, they're disenfranchised. But silly that is, because some of the best referrals I've seen happen into core organizations have come from indeed prior employees that have either wanted to come back at a certain time and doing the due diligence to make sure they're coming into a role that can capitalize on the new things they've experienced, as well as then they have a Pied Piper effect to bring forward those who could also service the needs of your company. You know, there is a special case that to be considered for elongating the pipeline. You know, just as with customers, why is it that so many companies spend so much time courting new business, just like they then overlook retaining the customers that we have? How about taking a look at currently the clients, meaning the customers, and the employees that you already have? And are you overlooking the opportunity to retain them and really grow them in new ways? Of course, the hot word in the circles these days is the word engagement. In other words, is the work that you've got your employees really tripping their triggers? Or is it just, quote, work? In fact, we had a guest last week that he said, if that what you do you call work, you're probably failing at it already. And he was a millennial, and Chris Rowers is his name. He runs his own business, for the Free Savannah Touring Company. And his point was, is if it's work, as opposed to it's fun, it's play, it plays to a passion, that you may not be going after meeting your own personal aspirations. So how could it be, as we looked at, for those of you who lead an organization, a manager, whatever the size of it, is are you constructing the work, or has it become something that is opening doors beyond that which an employee ever thought they'd be possible to do? And are you equipping them with that opportunity to do so? Now, this doesn't necessarily mean to drive organizational churn, meaning that you're going to lose these great employees. But quite honestly, every one of us should be assessing the roles, the responsibilities, and the type of work every employee is doing, because our business is changing. We started our show today. We spoke with Mark Samuel about this importance and the power of doing what is you versus what maybe what others think you are all about. And what a great skill that is for a supervisor to unleash that possibility in an individual and fit the right person to the right task. And we always talk about that, to really motivate them. Well, what about the opportunity of giving them stretch assignments? The opportunity then, too, to also retain the talented people you have is take a good look and see if you can engage with your employees on what's going on to their 5 to 9 lives. In other words, what do they do outside work that maybe you could anticipate, accommodate, and not just mitigate disruption, but potentially maximize the value to the business by capitalizing on what they love to do outside of work? Classic example for me is I had a very talented individual that worked in the organization in an engineering capacity, and I come to find out that he had just successfully led a $2.5 million capital campaign for the expansion of his synagogue. No one else in the office knew he'd even been involved in this, let alone that he had a passion around finance, tracking, inspiring others to donate. So my word, the possibility for us to suggest and just tease him with the idea, have you ever thought about going into new business development, like our prior guest Don Parkhurst from Airtronics, as a way to leverage your skills to attract new business for our company and use your technical engineering background in that pursuit? And for whatever reason, he'd never volunteered, raised his hands, or we'd known, but we moved him into a new business development role. And mark my word, within 5 years, he had a phenomenal promotion, and he had helped us grow the business because he played to his passion and a skill set that he otherwise had been redirecting, wonderfully so, by the way, with some things he did outside of work. The way to really further capitalize and cap that retention of our employees is, are they not only getting the chance to add value to what you offer as a business, but are they taking elements of what you're training them to do or giving them exposure to add value to their families, their schools, their volunteer organizations, and their communities in general to create a better place to live and thrive such that your employees would never dream of leaving? This idea of how to give local based on the incentives or the exposure they've gotten at work. I had an opportunity, of course, leading a very large manufacturing. One area you really focus on is health, wellness, and safety. And I put a challenge in front of my team at the time to say, you know, folks, this isn't just about protecting our employees when they're here at work. But what would it look like if they felt safer by coming to work for us, and that the things they've learned they could take to their home to make it safer for those that they love? Or organizations that are really focused on being green and sustainability and doing the right thing from a product standpoint of not polluting the environment, and how that mindset of recycling or collecting products or selecting materials that are not harmful for the environment, how that can reshape your thinking in your home or in your other activities you do in the community, and how you impact your children. How what you learned in the business world about cost savings or financial knowledge, how you could bring that into your own family budgeting domain, or time management and productivity is how you can help that guide you in that fashion. Those areas are all about, in this case, for extending the pipeline, but also elongating it by your employees wanting to stay and be committed to you at a time when the numbers are going to change. They are changing. You must be feeling it with the amount of people shifting in the workforce or shifting to want to stay. So key opportunities to capitalize then also for individuals is offering the chance for development and training plans that really speak to what they love to do, online learning programs so they can get my content, my time, and my learning modality. Additional special certification or degree-sponsored programs with the opportunity to do tuition reimbursement or full-up paying to keep them motivated. So these are motivated and focused on the future of your business. And then also a new benefit I might mention to you, this idea of how do we help our employees really look at financial life planning and how to empower them to navigate savings, investing, tax accounting, health care and wellness, their child care and their senior care, maybe plan for insurance, education, real estate investments. This whole opportunity that you as employers and leaders to help your employees manage their full financial life, not just the revenue stream of the wages and so on that they garner from being with you. That's our story, this idea that the great talent war, the demographic shifts that are in motion, it's a prime opportunity for leaders to step up, step wide, and step broad to serve the organization and also the talent that is every bit a part of taking your business forward, and that also this is an imperative that isn't just for the HR community, but really that your best and brightest to get involved in staffing, new program development, innovation, partnership, and the development of your line organization. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.